the truth hurts, especially when he hits you over the head with it. This is the Jeff Blair Show. Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
The Bills make me wanna shout. Kick your heels up and shout. Throw your hands up and shout. Throw your head back and shout. Come on now, the Bills are making it happen now. Stand up now, come on and shout. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Say you will.
Shout it right now, baby.
Say you will.
Come on, come on.
They make you want to shout, all right.
Come on and shout.
A lot of times they make you want to shout, Uncle!
Yeah.
Enough! It really is too easy a segue, isn't it? The Buffalo Bills. The Buffalo Bills have had a lot of weird stuff happen to them. And sometimes it's like weirdness compounded on top of weirdness. And sometimes the stuff that makes sense seems to be weird. Now, Doug Marrone had an opt-out clause given to him by Ralph Wilson that allowed him to walk away from the Bills in the event of an ownership change, which frankly, if I'm the head coach of a team and I know that there are rumblings about an ownership change going on and I don't know who that owner is going to be, I mean, I'm probably putting that in as a bit of a safety net for myself. So anyhow, Doug Marrone exercised his opt-out clause with the Buffalo Bills and, is now out on the market as a free agent. And there are a lot of teams looking for head coaches, one of them being, of course, the New York Jets. But subsequent to Doug Marrone exercising that clause in his contract, word got out that Bill Polian was going to return to the Buffalo Bills in kind of a mentorship role and was going to essentially be brought in to evaluate the job that Doug Whaley, the general manager, was doing. And of course, Bill Polian and Marv Levy, the twin architects of those great Buffalo Bills teams. Now, Bill Polian pulled his name out, essentially deciding to stay in his job as an ESPN analyst, but telling people that he made the decision because taking over that job was, quote, too heavy a lift. Now, if I'm a Bills fan, this is probably the thing out of this whole episode or series of episodes that would concern me. Oh, head coach exercises opt-out clause. Yeah, probably not the way you want to end your season, but the guy was exercising an opt-out clause. When I see a guy who's universally recognized and regarded as a pretty good evaluator of talent and a pretty good architect of football teams taking a look at my team and going, I don't know. Maybe I'd rather stay with ESPN. That's the thing that at the end of the day would give me cause for concern. Joe Biscaglia is a Buffalo Bills reporter for WGR 550 in Buffalo, and Joe Biscaglia joins the Jeff Blair Show. Joe, am I right? Am I reading that? Like, it's never good when your head coach leaves, and, it creates a lot of uncertainty. But when it's all said and done, I would be a little more concerned about a guy like Bill Polian, regardless of age, looking at my team's situation and essentially saying there's a lot of work to be done there.
Well, I think it's more of a unique situation than maybe just that in its most simplistic sense. I think with Doug Marrone's departure, he was a big part of the reason that Bill Polian was going to sign on with Bill. And once he opted out, Polian elected to opt out himself without ever actually signing anything. I think the heavy lift comment he made was more involved with the actual search for a head coach and be willing to commit to said head coach for as long as he could. I think Bill Polian probably looked at this as just a very short-term sort of thing, just because they had the head coach in place, they had a pretty talented roster, and he liked the head coach, but now that he had to go through a head coaching search, I think that's really what kind of alienated him, along with the whole needing a quarterback thing.
Joe, did Doug Marrone screw the Bills here?
It was not the greatest of looks for Doug Marrone, I'll put it like that.
Okay.
He essentially, he essentially went up to them and tried to leverage his opt-out clause into not only an extension for just him, but an extension for his entire staff, which if you look at it from a coaching staff perspective, you think that, okay, that's a good thing for him. But when you look at the facts, too, the guy in 2 years was 15-17. They went 9-7, not because of the offense, which is what he was brought in to do. He is an offensive mind, was the offensive coordinator for the Saints when they went to the Super Bowl and won it with Drew Brees and Sean Payton. And he was brought in to help that side of things. And with the defense doing as well as it did, I don't know that he necessarily deserves a lot of the credit for that defense, because he gave complete autonomy for two straight years to both Mike Pettine and Jim Schwartz. So did he screw the Bills from an on-paper perspective and leaving them high and dry? Yeah, he probably did. But I also think the Bills looked at him and looked at the head coach, who, in my opinion, is an average head coach for the NFL, and they essentially said, we're not going to allow this guy to pull over a power play on us as new owners. So it's a complex situation by all means, and there's a billion different ways you can look at it. But in the end, and I honestly think the Bills are going to be better for Doug Marrone leaving them.
Joe Biscali of WGR 550 joining the Jeff Blair Show. Ernie Accorsi has been hired elsewhere. Ron Wolf's been hired elsewhere. Charlie Casserly, as Jerry Sullivan points out in his column in the news, sort of while all this is happening, three people who, like Bill Polian, might have been able to come in and kind of give you that independent analysis of your organization have since moved on elsewhere. Where do you think the Pegulas go now? And is this, in some ways, is this, do you think, an example of a family or new ownership maybe being a little bit slow in the uptake?
Yeah, I think that's a part of it. But they've certainly gotten a crash course in how to handle the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they have had perhaps one of the most unique experiences as owners, as really anyone in their first year. Because, think about all the stuff that has happened, the displacing of the team, the overwhelming the quarterback change and the subsequent chase for the playoffs, and then after that, Doug Marrone is deciding to opt out. So there's been so much stuff. But I think in the end, it's probably going to be a good thing for them to face this kind of adversity this early into their ownership, so they don't put trust in the wrong people. And they learned the Pegulas are big on trust. They are huge trust people.
Mm-hmm.
And for them to learn early on about the type of personalities around the NFL and how everyone's kind of me first, especially with how the whole Doug Marrone situation went down, I think that'll be good for them. So their next step, I mean, with all the pins that have fallen in this whole situation since the start of the new year, the one left standing is Doug Whaley, the GM, who's still with the team. We don't know how big of a role he'll be, or if he's going to continue in his job. You would have to think he does, just because he's the last guy standing, and he has actually done a pretty good job in assembling a talented roster outside of the quarterback position. Now, what will they do? I think their next course of action is to go into a mode to try and find a head coach. And I don't know that they're going to necessarily be able to find someone as a football czar to come in and oversee the complete football operation. But I think what they're doing, they're going out and probably looking for people that they can come to trust as a head coach and then go from there. So I think that is priority number one for the Bills as they go along in this offseason.
Joe, who do you think would be interested in that job? Now, you're coming in with the GM already in place. You're coming in with a team that doesn't have a first-round pick this year. You've got E.J. Manuel, a quarterback. The guy who finished the year as your quarterback, Kyle Orton, has retired. Is it still an attractive job? I mean, I know it's the whole, hey, it's one of only a handful of jobs on the planet. Of course, I'm going to take it. It's that whole situation. But who do you see as being a possible fit? And if not a name, what type of guy do the Bills need as a head coach?
Honestly, I think from a type of guy that they need, I think they need someone who's a little bit more innovative from the offensive perspective. I mean, all the names, the big names that fans want teams to go after, you know, Bill Cowher, Gruden, if he didn't sign his extension with ESPN, Mike Shanahan, these guys, I mean, they're all well and good, but they don't have the true innovation in which the game is kind of trending towards in itself. And the Bills need to get creative offensively because they are ready to win now. So to answer your question, I think this is an attractive job from a talent perspective on the defensive side of the ball. So if they can find someone who can continue that trend and continue to cultivate the talent on the defensive side of the ball and or employ the people to do that exact thing and find someone that has more of an offensive background, I think that might be the way to go about it. Now, who would be interested in it? That's another question entirely, because when you look at it from the perspective of what just went down with Doug Marrone, you have a head coach who is now in public with the report who ripped the Bills organization to Bill Polian. Mm. So the coaching fraternity is a very strong one. And anyone that is thinking about taking a job with the Buffalo Bills, they're probably going to reach out to Doug Marrone and say, hey, what went wrong there? And that probably won't be a very fortuitous conversation. So it's a very tricky thing as to who will inevitably be the guy. But I think by and large, it's going to be someone that will buy into what the Pegulas are selling, a very family type of environment, a very trust-built system, and then go from there.
Does the name Frank Reich make sense?
It does, in a sense. It made more sense if Polian was involved, just because the two have been intertwined for a very long time, going back to Polian's days in Carolina. So I still think he's a candidate. I think Adam Gase, the Denver offensive coordinator, is someone they would like to interview. I think probably the Seattle defensive coordinator, Dan Quinn, is someone that could be a name. Hey, I wouldn't even rule out Jim Schwartz, the Bills' current defensive coordinator, as someone who could potentially interview and even get that job. So those are just a few names. In terms of the Cowers and Rudins and Shanahan, I wouldn't hold my breath.
Joe Biscaglia joining the Jeff Blair Show. Where do the Bills go as far as quarterbacking is concerned now?
Go all in and try and facilitate a trade for one of them, because this team is close. They have talent on the defensive side of the ball. They actually do have talent on the offensive side of the ball. They just lack a guy that can consistently get the ball into the hands of at least one dynamic wide receiver and a very good complementary option in Robert Woods. So to me, the names Jay Cutler and Sam Bradford both make sense if their individual teams elect to look for a trade or at least want to listen to trade offers. I would go all in on that and put a Band-Aid on the situation, try and find someone with more talent, because let's face it, this past year, if the offense got average to slightly above average play out of its quarterback, it's probably a playoff team. And since they did not, they were pushed to the back of the line in terms of the playoffs. They still went 9-7, but that was in spite of the offense. So I'm going all in, trying to put a Band-Aid on the quarterback situation, and then find a more long-term solution in either the 2016 or 2017 drafts in the first round.
And I guess, as you said, you know, the one thing, and we in general in the media, I mean, there is always a tendency to kind of look at everything as a looming crisis. But the one thing you do know about the Bills is that defense should be good enough to keep you in games next year. And,
yeah.
You know, that's... I guess in some ways that kind of structures what you're looking for in a quarterback, right? You don't need to hit a home run with the quarterback. You can get a guy. I mean, essentially what you want with the Bills is you want an offensive mind guiding the show, whether it's as head coach or offensive coordinator, and you want a quarterback who can just be effective, right? You want somebody who can manage what his OC and the head coach want him to do.
Which is why it makes someone like a Sam Bradford an attractive option. He's got 1 year left on his deal. He's had the injury history, but he's a good sized guy. He has a solid enough arm to where it could cut through the wind of Orchard Park, whatever it is, which I think is an overhyped factor, whatever that does come into play in November and December. But that is the type of guy you're talking about, because he won't be a fan favorite by any means. He has a good touchdown to interception ratio, but he's of the school of dump down quarterbacking, and that has driven the fans of the Rams nuts at times. But he's also a lot more accurate than a Kyle or an EJ Manuel, so maybe that guy makes sense. Jay Cutler, I think, would be the potential home run or blow up in your face option, because that guy is so ridiculously talented, but his head is usually in his behind a lot of times if things are going awry. And if you need a solid head coach or offense coordinator in place to cultivate that talent. So whatever the case may be, the Bills need to do something, because the defense, while it was superb this past year, from one year to the next in the NFL, good defenses usually regress, not to a large degree, but at least to a smaller degree, to where I don't think the Bills will be as good defensively next year, but I still think they'll be pretty darn good, and a good quarterback, or even a slightly above average quarterback, should be able to help this team to get playoff contention and maybe even the postseason.
Would they have? Would they like a redo in the draft this year? I mean, I know that's horribly hypothetical and really, but would they?
I think Sammy Watkins was the apple of their eye the entire time. So, and granted, given the situation, because you cannot take the enormity of the situation away from the deal that was struck. The owner had just passed away. They had no idea what was going to happen in 2015. No one would know if someone would come in and completely clean house from a coaching and GM perspective. So they elected to go all in and try to trade for Sammy Watkins, and successfully did so by giving up the first round pick. Would Doug Whaley do that trade under normal circumstances? I have my doubts. So would they take it back? Probably not. If it was a perfect situation where they knew the ownership was settled, then I think maybe they would have stood pat at 9 and taken either Eric Ebron or Odell Beckham Jr. But you can't always look at it from that perspective, because there was a lot more complex than that.
Joe, it was great of you to join us today. Thanks so much again. Have a happy new year. And looks like, if nothing else, it's going to be a really, really busy new year for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be hard to top 2014 for news in Buffalo. But yeah, it's going to be pretty good.
Take care, Joe.
Thanks.
It's Joe Biscott. He's the Buffalo Bills beat reporter on WGR 550 and does yeoman-like work with the Bills. A little bit of breaking news here. As we get to Rick Bucher, the Toronto Blue Jays have officially completed their major league staff and their minor league staff for the 2015 season. They have, I guess, made known or made formal what's been known for a while. Dane Johnson will be taking over as bullpen coach. Eric Owens will be the assistant hitting coach. He will assist Brooke Jacoby in 2015. So the Jays going that way, they will have an assistant hitting coach. Sal Fasano is going to be the minor league pitching coordinator, which is going to make Baseball Central a hoot this year, because we're going to get Fasano on as often as we can. Darryl Knowles will take over as rehabilitation pitching coach. And it's kind of an interesting move. Rick Langford has been named senior pitching advisor. Now, Rick Langford was a rehabilitation pitching coach with the organization. He was on the major league staff under Jim Fregosi. He's been with the organization for a long time. And he did a terrific job last year in what was essentially a mentorship role. And what the Blue Jays did with Rick Langford last year, knowing that they had all these good young arms in the organization, they essentially told him to go out and work with and talk to some of the young pitchers. Tell them about preparation. Tell them about what it's like to be a major league pitcher. Work with them, delivery. I mean, anything like that. He was essentially a mentor to some of the pitchers in this organization. Pitchers like Daniel Norris and some of the higher, you know, the higher profile pitchers, the guys who are close to the major league. So he has now been given the position of senior pitching advisor, which he's been with the Blue Jays organization since 96. He's been the minor league rehab and roving pitching instructor for the past 4 years. So those moves made official by the Blue Jays today. Eric Owens, minor league hitting coordinator in the Los Angeles Dodgers organization. He was a 9-year major league player, played for a bunch of teams, the Reds, Brewers, Padres, Marlins, and Angels. He will be the assistant hitting coach with the organization. He'll be minor league hitting coordinator, or he has been minor league hitting coordinator for the Dodgers for the past 4 years, so he'll be on the staff as an assistant hitting coach. So there you go. Those are some official announcements from the Toronto Blue Jays. Your Toronto Raptors get back on the court tonight against the Golden State Warriors. The Raptors 24-8, the Warriors 25-5. The best show, pardon me, I think the best show in the NBA. Rick Bucher is senior writer for Bleacher Report. He has covered the Golden State Warriors extensively. And Rick Bucher joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Rick, before we talk specifically about the Golden State Warriors and Steve Kerr's impact on them as head coach, I wanted to get your take on what we're seeing in Cleveland right now. LeBron James is out for 2 weeks. We're not used to seeing LeBron James being hurt, first of all, but he's out for 2 weeks. There's been indications that he's not entirely happy with the direction of the team under David Blatt. There's also this this back and forth between himself and Dwayne Wade after that Christmas Day game, the upshoot of it essentially being LeBron James saying to Dwayne Wade, hey, if this doesn't work out, we got to get together again. And my sense is that he wasn't talking about going to Miami or Wade going to Cleveland. Where's this all going? Is this just are people just reading too much into three or four sort of totally removed, totally different circumstances here?
Yeah, I don't see any way that LeBron can leave Cleveland again. He's already done enough damage to his Q rating and his image the first time that he left. He lost money there that he can never get back as far. And I know that he's got a lot of endorsements. He's still making a ton of money off the court, but he's not making what he could have made if he hadn't done that. If he does it again, his endorsement value just plummets. It's on par with Tiger Woods falling off. So, and he said, as much as he talks now about I want to be seen as the greatest player ever, his desire all along was his number one thing that he wanted to get done is that he wanted to be the most wealthy athlete ever, wanted to be a billionaire. And so I'm sure that he has an eye toward that. So I'm not buying that, and I'm certainly not buying that Dwayne Wade is going to go to Cleveland. I think way too much is being made out of a snippet of conversation combined with a lot of frustration about what Cleveland really presents for him. And to me, again, it's much like when he went to Miami, is that whether it's his advisors or whether it's LeBron, he seems to be naive about what he's walking into. He never expected Cleveland would react the way it did when he left, even though anybody from the outside would have said, hey, you're going to do a one-hour special. You've given no indication that you're leaving, and you're going to take your talents to Miami and talk about what a great place that is for you to be. The people in your hometown are going to be upset. You didn't expect that. You weren't thinking. And the same thing, coming back to Cleveland. I had them as the fourth best team at the beginning of the season in the Eastern Conference, and people thought I was crazy. And I questioned whether David Blatt would be able to secure the confidence and trust of NBA players when he's never coached at all in any way, in any phase of the NBA game. And so all of it's coming to bear. I mean, for me, what we're seeing is really not a shock. It's kind of what I expected. It's been maybe a little more pronounced than I expected, but I didn't think that David Blatt was going to lead them to a championship, and I didn't think that they had the requisite pieces to play defense at the level that a team needs to, and they really didn't have the depth. So what we're seeing doesn't surprise me. And if it's anything surprises me, is that it's that one more time it surprises LeBron.
Mm. Rick Bucher in conversation with us on the Jeff Blair Show. All right, let's shift focus a little bit to the Golden State Warriors. We'll be joined, by the way, by Alvin Gentry, assistant coach for the Golden State Warriors, at the bottom of the hour. But they're 25-5. It's their best start through 30 games in franchise history. 12-1 at home. Lead the league in field goal percentage, opponents' field goal percentage, blocks, defensive rebounds, point differential. All this, just imagine they're doing all this without Kevin Love.
Yeah, and thank goodness for them that they recognized, which I think a lot of people didn't, that giving up Klay Thompson and breaking up that backcourt, and two, that what Klay Thompson had already demonstrated in his performances in the postseason as a two-way player at his position was greater than the statistics that Kevin Love had for a Minnesota team that and this is the question that I have, and I have it with Anthony Davis now.
Mm-hmm.
You can show me these terrific statistics. You can tell me about the individual talent. When it doesn't translate to victories, then to me they are hollow statistics. And the knee-jerk reaction is to say, well, look at the talent around him. Well, I look at the talent around Kevin Love in Minnesota, and it wasn't great, but it wasn't lacking to the point that I compare it to Kevin Garnett when he was there.
Mm-hmm.
He dragged those teams into the postseason. It might have been the eighth seed, and they might have been out, but they at least made it there. Klay Thompson, people didn't recognize it. I live in the Bay Area, so I've had a firsthand view of it. I was a sideline reporter for the Warriors for the last 2 years, so I got a really good look at it. I knew what he was capable of, and I didn't anticipate, and I don't know that anybody could have, that being with the national team last summer would have the huge influence that it did. But clearly, it gave him a confidence and made him see himself as one of the very best in the league, in which he would talk it, but he didn't always walk it previously. And playing with those guys, being respected and regarded the way he did, being the leading scorer on that national team in certain games, I believe did something for him that you just couldn't replicate. And he came back. He came back a different player, and as did Steph, but more so Klay. Draymond Green also came back individually because of his own work as a different player. So when I look at the improvement with this Golden State Warriors team, and you know, one of the other elements that one prominent GM who's had a lot of success in this league said to me is that, and I think the Toronto Raptors are a reflection of this too, is that with the salary with the salary cap the way it is right now, it's not about acquiring talent; it's about retaining what you have, and that consistency and continuity is one of the elements that is that reigns supreme right now. And if you look at the teams that are having success, and maybe some who are having success that at surprising levels, it's because they had very few or no changes.
Mm-hmm.
Golden State Warriors, Toronto Raptors,
Blazers,
Washington Wizards,
right.
The Portland Trail Blazers. All these teams sort of held serve and maybe didn't have the big splashy off-season signings. And then you look at a team like the Charlotte Hornets who did make a significant change, and those are the teams that are struggling. So right now that continuity and that ability to just maintain what you have is serving a lot of teams well.
When Steve Kerr was named head coach of this team, what was your initial reaction, and have you seen anything that has surprised you out of Steve Kerr so far? I mean, I got to tell you, the combination, look, I'm used to seeing this team shoot the lights out, but watching them play defense and still play at a fast pace and be able to play defense, that's remarkable.
Yeah. Well, it's been a growing factor. I mean, Mark Jackson, if there was any influence that he had on this team since he was with the Warriors, it was that he instilled a defensive mindset that had not been there for many, many years. Certainly Don Nelson didn't give that a whole lot of influence or concentration. And so it, the combination of Steve Kerr and Ron Adams, who really is the secret weapon, he's the defensive guru, and Alvin Gentry. I mean, Steve Kerr is certainly he's a I don't know if he's a great basketball mind. I know he's a good basketball mind, and he's had some great mentors. But he's a lot like, slightly different way, but it's like Larry Bird winning Coach of the Year in Indiana when he had Rick Carlisle and Dick Carter.
Right.
He had a great staff, and Steve has a great staff. And I love his, for a first-year head coach, a great demeanor, great comportment. I mean, he's been great. There's no reason that he's not going to be great. But he inherited a defensive mindset that was already there, and he has a great staff to continue that on. And as I mentioned, he has guys like Draymond Green, who took a huge step forward, Klay Thompson, who took a huge step forward. He's had Andrew Bogut and Festus Ezeli, two centers, for the better part of this season, which Mark Jackson never had last year. He never had Festus Ezeli. Andrew Bogut was in and out. Sometimes he was playing, but he was still playing hurt. So I think the combination of all that, and that's what I'll be really interested to see over, and we've seen a little bit of it, but as they continue now and play some of the better teams, is how does that defense hold up, particularly against a team like Toronto that has a lot of size inside and has an offensive rebounder like Amir Johnson. Can they continue that with the sort of roster that Mark Jackson was working with last year? That, to me, is going to be the real litmus test as to whether Steve Kerr and the staff has had is doing a better job than Mark and his group did last year.
Rick, it was great you to join us this morning. Thanks so much. Happy New Year, by the way. And we'll do this again.
Sounds good.
Take care. That's Rick Bucher. He's the Bleacher Report senior writer, also hosts Bleacher Report Radio. One of the best NBA, national NBA reporters out there. And again, we will have the Golden State Warriors and the Raptors will play tonight. Tip-off is at 10:30. Alvin Gentry is the assistant coach with the Golden State Warriors. He joined Steve Kerr's staff from Doc Rivers' staff, the LA Clippers. Alvin Gentry is up next when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We'll have the Leafs game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. At 8 o'clock tonight, Stellick and Osborne at the pregame show at 7 o'clock. The basketball game between the Raptors and Golden State Warriors will be on Sportsnet or Sportsnet TV channels with the exception of Sportsnet 1 at 10:30 tonight. We'll be joined in progress on Sportsnet West as well. I don't know why you wouldn't want to watch the Raptors and Golden State Warriors. I mean, I've, what, for 3 years, 2 years, 2.5 years, been telling everybody that I think the Golden State Warriors are the best show on the hardwood. There's no other team I'd rather watch. This year, they're still scoring a ton of points, but they have also turned into a pretty good defensive team. And I find that interesting because they play at a really rapid rate in terms of possessions per game, yet they're still able to play good defense. That's not always an easy combination to pull off. Alvin Gentry is assistant coach with the Golden State Warriors, and Alvin Gentry joins the Jeff Blair Show. Alvin, thanks so much for taking time out this morning
All
to
right,
talk
how
to
you
us.
Doing, Joe?
I'm doing well. Happy New Year to you and yours.
Same to you.
How has this team been able to maintain the pace that it plays at offensively, but also be defensively responsible?
Well, you know, it started last season. I think people didn't realize this team was ranked third defensively in the league last year. So it's a very good defensive team. And what we tried to do is just shore up a couple of things that we saw defensively. And we always felt like defensive field goal percentage was a great gauge of exactly, you know, how good you were regardless of the point scored. What were their field goal percentage? And we've been very good in that area right there. As a matter of fact, I think we lead the league right now. So mm-hmm. it's an area where, you know, we put total concentration into, along with trying to play a little more up-tempo and get more ball movement. We're passing the ball right now about 45 times more than we did last year. So we've got better ball movement, which in turn has increased our assists and gotten us easier baskets.
Alvin, in some ways, is it when you have a team that scores a lot of points, in some ways, is it easy to get guys to play defense? Because I remember Hubie Brown talking about how he would sometimes tell guys, hey, you know what, you guys will get your points. Play responsible defense for me. We'll get the ball faster. We'll have more opportunities. And if you do that, you know, it's easier to keep everybody happy. If everybody's being fed, right, it's easier.
Well, that's the way we feel. We feel like, if you play fast and you got ball movement, we tell our guys all the time that the ball is going to find energy. And if you're an energy guy, some kind of way, the ball always seems to find that guy. So our guys begin to, cut harder, set better screens, throw better passes. And because of that, we've had some success, I think.
Alvin Gentry in conversation with us on the Jeff Blair Show. When you joined that team along with Steve Kerr, it's a team that I think you got 7 or 8 guys returning from last year, which, I think one of the keys to a lot of the success we're seeing NBA teams have this year, whether it's you guys or Portland or here in Toronto with the Raptors or even Washington, is you've got that core returning, which makes for a little more consistency. But how difficult is it for a new head coach and an assistant or associate coach to come into a situation where you've got a team that has an identity, a little bit of postseason success, but also has a bunch of guys returning? Is it easier or more difficult?
Well, yeah, I think it's a lot easier. You know, you have the core of guys that have been together that kind of know each other and got a feel for each other. And, because of that, I think it's a little bit easier. You know, Cleveland is going through a little bit of a tough time, and I think it's very unfair what is happening to David Blatt up there. You know, they put together a team that hadn't been together. Those guys hadn't played together at all, and it does take time to adjust. And a philosophy that you're going to have and the way you're going to play. And we've been fortunate enough to have a core of players, and I see Toronto as the same thing. They've been fortunate enough to have a core of players, and you can see the success that both these teams are having.
Alvin Gentry is the assistant coach of the Golden State Warriors, joining us on the Jeff Blair Show. You coached, or you were on Doc Rivers' staff in L.A. Now that you've seen this team up close, anything as their assistant you've seen that surprises you that you maybe didn't see as an opposing coach?
Well, no, not really. You know, last year we played these guys 11 times, I think. So, I had a pretty good feel of what was going on here. I do think that there's great chemistry here, and I do think that, when we have a whole roster of players, Andrew Bogut is very important to our team, and he's been hurt and been out. But when we do have that full roster of players, I do like our chances really against in any team in the league. So, our whole thing is that we've got to get completely healthy. But even with the guys sitting out, we've had guys that have stepped in and done a great job for us.
Alvin, what was the selling point for you in joining Steve and his staff?
Well, I had a great relationship with Doc, and, it was a great situation for me there. I'm just Steve and I are very close. We go all the way back to the Phoenix days. Actually, we go all the way back to his senior year in high school. So when I was a college coach trying to convince him to come to the University of Colorado. But I've just remained close to him, and, he was brave enough to hire me to coach the Phoenix Suns, and, that's something that I never forget. So when we talked, obviously, I'm very comfortable with him, and I thought that he was going to be a great coach, and there's nothing that he's done here that doesn't lead me to believe that that's going to be absolutely true. So it was a great situation here. I thought this team had potential to do some special things, and I thought with Steve's guidance, they'd have an opportunity to do that. So I thought it was a great situation for me, and that's why I'm here.
Alvin Gentry in conversation with us on the Jeff Blair Show. Klay Thompson came back from Team USA, it seems to me. I don't know if I'd say a more complete player, but he certainly looked He looked like a different player in some ways, maybe more mature, maybe more confident. I don't know. Maybe a greater sense of self-awareness. Have you seen something different in him since that experience?
I think the confidence thing is what you hit on is really important. You know, he had games in, with that team, and, you know, you're talking about the best young players in the NBA. Now, obviously, some of the guys didn't go, but he had an opportunity to really shine on that team and had some great shooting games and some great things that happened. And I just think that it was a situation where he really came back and felt like he belonged with that elite group.
Alvin, listen, it was great of you to join us today. Wish we had more time to talk to you. Thanks so much again. Have a happy new year. Continued success with the Golden State Warriors. It's, tell you what, it's a fun team to watch. I've got to think it's a fun team to help coach, too.
Well, you guys got a great team up there, and it'll be a great challenge for us tonight. Dwayne Casey's done a great job of just, you know, taking step by step and getting that team to an elite team in this league. So he's done a tremendous job up there for you guys, and it's a fun team to watch also.
Yeah, it'll be must-see TV tonight. Again, Alvin, thanks so much for joining us.
All right. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
It's Alvin Gentry, associate coach, assistant coach with the Golden State Warriors. And again, on all the Sportsnet channels tonight, the exception of Sportsnet 1, 10:30 tip-off, Golden State Warriors, Toronto Raptors. Stay up late. It's Friday. This is one that's worth staying up late for. I wouldn't tell you that. I'm a big fan of going to bed and reading and all that stuff. I wouldn't be telling you to stay up late if I didn't think it was going to be worth it. If you're not a Raptors fan or a basketball fan already, watch this game. You'll be converted. That's it for the Blair Show. I'll be doing primetime sports with Bob McCowan next week. Actually, Bob McCown won't be there, so I'll be doing primetime sports. I'll also be in the Friday roundtable today as well with Chris Johnson, Brunt, and Sid Sixero. That's it for me. Hockey Central at noon is next. Scott Salmon, Vice President of Hockey Operations for National Teams with Hockey Canada, will join Millard, Stelic, and Shannon. Have a great day, everybody.